The views expressed on this podcast are only those of the individuals featured on the show and do not in any way reflect the official policy of the United States government.
You are listening to the Embassy Wealth Podcast. We believe wealth isn't just about finances and money. It includes health, relationships, and anything else that makes you excited to get up in the morning. We interview members of the foreign affairs community to see how they're building wealth, both personally and financially, no matter where they're posted. This is your host, Tanya Salsa. Let's get to today's show. And with that, I want to segue, because I think actually I want to do two episodes because we have a whole great episode on short-term rentals. And now I'd like to shift to self-storage, which is its own topic, right? So talk to me a little bit about how you went from short-term rentals, which it sounds like you're killing it, honestly, with your two cabins. And, you know, you're doing a really awesome job. It's really profitable. It's intense, but profitable. So how does self-storage come into the picture?
We want to be diversified. We want to diversify what we're doing. And we're constantly learning. I mean, we're spending, with as Courtney said, with her commute, she's spending a lot of time hearing ideas. Then when, you know, once the kids go to bed at night, we like to bounce these ideas off of each other and have conversations about it.
How we
settled on self-storage was, it's actually kind of similar to short-term rentals, but less intense. And so I was like, yes, please, and twice, right? So let's do that. And if your spouse is going to be your business partner, there will be sometimes you don't agree on things. And so the first self-storage facility that we purchased is very small. And Courtney was not interested in us purchasing a small self-storage facility.
Define small. Is it like number of actual self-storage units?
Correct. Yeah.
And what's considered small?
Okay. So yeah. So this is in the rural Southeast in Southeast Tennessee. It's just 24 units. Okay. So it's 2,400 square feet or 2,600 square feet, 24 units. Very small, zero maintenance. You know, it's a steel building with a steel roof. We have no fence. And that's fine. And so we bought it from someone. So we did kind of shift gears to let's diversify a little bit. Courtney and I went to a conference, a self-storage conference before COVID happened.
Like right before COVID.
Like literally it was the last conference that this provider did before they kind of said, okay, no more in-person conferences. And so I got excited about self-storage. I think Courtney was from the start more excited about short-term rentals. And from the start, I've been more excited about self-storage. And so we're just diversifying. We added that facility, and then we're in the process of adding two more hopefully in the next 20 days. We're going to close on two more.
Nice. So how does one find a self-storage facility and buy it?
Yeah. Well, I'll just add one thing I wanted to add is, you know, short-term rentals and self-storage. No. This is short-term rental and self-storage. What is the connection there? It seems like two very different
classes. Yes.
But I think they actually have a lot in common in that they both are highly dependent on the operator. So I like to describe them as entrepreneurial real estate asset classes because short-term rental revenue can vary really widely depending on who is operating the property.
Yep.
You can have the same 100%. House, the same floor plan right next to each other, and they will do very different numbers because of how you manage it. Self-storage facilities are the same way. And that industry, we see a lot more room for growth as well because, you know, they have kind of been the, how should I say this?
The like, redheaded stepchild of investing.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So there's a lot of mom and pops who still keep all their records in a spiral notebook.
And are killing
and
it. They're just killing it money-wise.
Killing it. They have not innovated, like modernized operations at all. And if you listen to any of the self-storage investing gurus, this is all what they're saying, right? Is that you want to find these facilities, you want to modernize your operations, have better revenue management, and you will just see massive growth in your NOI. So we say we like to invest in these asset classes because we also want to develop entrepreneur skill sets. And you know, a lot of people get into real estate investing because they want the mailbox money. They want the set it and forget it, the passive income. And yes, we do too, but we're not necessarily like, you know, we just want to never think about it and hand everything to a property manager. We want to develop those skills. We want to learn how to run a business because we think that's just so applicable and useful in so many areas of life. And these asset classes definitely do that.
Amazing. I love it.
And I'm so impressed, honestly, because I think, you know, my poor long-suffering husband has been listening to me talk about real estate for the last decade. And it's really amazing that you guys have managed to find something that like both of you can work on that gives Matt a, you know, a salary and like a complete job no matter where he goes, which is really, really something, I think, for the Foreign Service lifestyle, you know, and that, and it's something that can travel with you, right? It's something that is appreciating. It's something you could teach your kids about, right? So, I mean, I think there's so many great aspects to investing as a family, right? And like, of course, my husband is on board now, but at first he was kind of like, what is this thing and why does she keep talking about it? But yeah, I mean, I think your story is really amazing. And I like the fact that you're very into the active part, which I am too, right? Because again, I think a lot of people's dream is like mailbox money, make money while I sleep, which is great. Not going to knock that, right? But there is something to be said for really applying what you have, learning things, discovering how to make something better. There's something very satisfying about that. Mm-hmm. So that really resonates with me as well. So going back to the self-storage facility, how on earth did you find this sort of little self-storage facility of 24 units in East Tennessee? Did you just call up people? I mean, if you're overseas, like how do you locate these kinds of places?
Courtney's favorite person in short-term rental is Avery, and my favorite person in self-storage is Stacy Rossetti. And so once we decided, okay, we're going to go with this, I kind of got in her group and learned how to do some of the things that they were doing. There are options. I use text, I use phone calls, I use mailers, I use emails, but we are very focused on buying the facilities that actually don't have websites, because if they have a website, they're making
gotten to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're making their money. And if they have a website, it's pretty automated, which means it's not taking much of their time. We want to buy facilities that don't have a website. The facility that we bought was not on Google. Like there was a longitude and latitude. There was no address, right?
So how'd you know it existed though? Did you have to go to the yellow pages?
No, we drove. Yeah, we got to drive because it's near Courtney's family. It's 4 miles from Courtney's family's house. And so I was like, you know, I like this facility. This guy owned it. He was a locksmith by trade and bought this and put this facility here. And as I said, kept good enough records to where I could, you know, understand what was going on with the facility before we made an offer to him. But he was ready to sell it. He made his money on it, both from what he purchased it and then what he was charging per month. And then when I went to him and said, hey, here's what I'll give you for it. He said, all right, let's do it. And that's how it went.
You just wandered in to the shop and was like, hey, about selling?
Or? No, you're giving it too much credit. There is no shop. There is no office. Like I called them. Right? It's literally just, it's a grassy yard with buildings on it. Like it is unsexy.
How'd you even find the phone number? Like
there was a sign on the side. There was a sign on the side. And you know, it was his cell phone. So I connected straight to the owner, right? Because when you're managing 24 units,
you're the dude, right?
Correct. And he had another business in this town. And he said exactly what I want to hear is, I haven't thought about selling it, but tell me what you're thinking. Because that means that I can guide the conversation. And I can say, okay, here's what I would like to do. Here's, you know, I have analysis that I run as well, the same way that Courtney runs on the short-term rentals. And I can say, here's what your property's worth based on, as a business. You know, I'm not counting the land. I'm counting your property is worth blank as a business. I'm literally this week, I was telling Courtney, I was like writing the rate increase letters because the individuals who rent from the previous owner, I have their contracts. And so they signed up in 2017 and he hasn't raised rents once.
Oh my. Right?
And so I now look at this and I can raise rents 20% probably. Uh-huh. Okay. And I didn't do that right away, much to Courtney's chagrin again. However,
he's such a nice landlord. This is also why
Yes, an entrepreneur, like Courtney said. This is also why I didn't raise rents because I had to get on Google and make sure there was a demand enough. So when someone moves out, I'm going to lose two tenants when I raise rent. Yeah. I might lose three.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. I get 3 calls a week and I'll plug them in those spots at a higher rate. Let's do this. I'm fine with that. Right. Or and this is the other when I kind of trick to self-storage, like people don't want to come get their stuff out. They don't, they'll give you an extra $10 a month and not have to get a U-Haul and come get their stuff out and then do what with it? Take it to throw it in the backpack. You know, it's complicated. And so we're in this, like I said, this small town in Tennessee, and someone rents a unit from us from California. Ironically, she's actually former Foreign Service.
Oh, that is so funny.
Yeah. She found out what she was doing, what we were doing. Like she did a tour in Kabul. She's like trying to explain it to me and everything. So
that is awesome.
There's 24 units and one of them was a former Foreign Service officer. Yeah. Well, she wasn't FSO. What was she, Courtney? Site Security, I think.
She's in the family OBO or something like that.
Wait, you do what? You know, it's like, yeah, we've been abroad for 10 years. So this one was found. I called the guy's phone number, had a couple conversations with him, and purchased it. And I say that to say, that sounds great. And it was, but I've also made at least 10 offers to where I don't even get a counter back because I'm offering at what I will pay for it. And they're, you're crazy. I'm not selling it for that. All right. No problem. Right. Because these are off market. These are off market. The one we bought in Tennessee is off market. The second one that we're buying in Tennessee is off market. And the third one that we're going to buy, which is actually a good size, is in Florida. It's off market as well. My family's in middle Florida. And so I was drawn to that area. Obviously, I like Tennessee and Florida because the people are moving there in droves right now, which is fantastic for both short-term rentals and for self-storage. And so Florida was the market that we wanted to get into, and I found this one. And the Florida one has been terribly long and painful process, but I think we're finally close to closing. The other one in Tennessee came through a network. If you have time, it's got a funny story about how I've been filling that facility myself with the hopes that I was going to buy it. Because he just built this facility and he's not on Google either. And so every time I get a call and I'm full, which I am full, I say, hey, call this guy over here. And for the last 6 months, I've been trying to buy his facility. And so I finally talked him into and had a conversation with him and came to a mutual understanding about owner finance. And so he's going to owner finance the deal for us. And so he's our bank.
Oh my gosh. Amazing.
We're putting a good amount of money down, which is what he wanted. And we're going to get, you know, we've got a 10-year window with no balloon, and we're owning it out right after that. And he's also the construction guy. So we're in the conversation now to add 24 more units to the second Tennessee site.
Fantastic. Amazing.
That goes along with what you talked about earlier about the family deal. Like Courtney's parents have watched what we're doing, and now Courtney's parents are going to get involved with us. They're going to be part owners on this facility. And so I'm excited about that. I have a great relationship with them, and they're right there. And they know this network. They know this area. It's peace of mind for us as owners living abroad, right? So that helps.
So, I mean, this is wild. So you join this self-storage community, right? And you learn sort of the tricks of the trade about, you know, how to evaluate a property, which, I mean, generally speaking, from the business stuff that I've looked at, it's usually like 2 to 3 times, gross revenue per year is sort of kind of what the valuation of a business is. Because I looked at laundromats for a little bit too. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm curious, is self-storage kind of similar to that in businesses when you're looking at like the revenue generated versus what you're offering for it? And then you kind of adjust for based on, because the real estate is included, right?
Correct.
So you've got the land, you've got the building, which is a whole, you know, separate thing. Plus you've actually got the running operating business. So usually I would think at least for laundromats, they do it separately. The real estate is valuated separately from the business and then you're buying both, correct?
Right. Self-storage, it's the package, right? Unless for some reason the land was leased, which obviously I would not do that. That just seems like I'm too complicated and not the way for us to make the most money. Because as Courtney said, we go back to the first conversation, which is land and real estate are worth something always, right?
Yep.
So I want to own the land that it's sitting on. So
what all the self-storage gurus like to say is that self-storage is like the benefits of both a small business and real estate.
Yes.
Kind of all in one, because you get all the really good depreciation. That's a big benefit of that asset class.
But the write-offs of having a business.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent. And so how does one buy a self-storage facility?
Yeah. So the first one we purchased, we actually made a cash purchase. And so I put together the proposal and talked to Courtney and said, here's how much we're going to make per year, because the expenses of self-storage are very low.
Minimal.
Because once again,
no toilets to fix in the middle of the night. Yeah. No plumbers.
One of the biggest gurus. Yeah. One of the biggest gurus. If you start looking around to like learn about self-storage, one of the biggest gurus out there, Scott Myers, loves to say no toilets, tenants are trash. Mm-hmm. That's his like little motto.
There is trash, because that's actually not true.
I'm gonna say there's trash. Yeah.
Like, there's a dumpster. Like, I'm like, the one we're buying in Florida, I'm trying to convince the guy to remove the dumpster because I don't want the dumpster there. Because I got to pay someone to move someone's trash. But
right. It's inviting trash, basically. Right.
So, the expenses are very low. Taxes on these are low, generally speaking. Of course, this is my market that I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, state by state.
Of course, you have insurance on it. And then I'm the manager. I am literally like running people's cards, and Courtney's dad is my boots on the ground. And so a few people still pay by check. Once again, Courtney's not thrilled with that, but she's accepting it as we go along.
So 1983. I got you, girl. Yeah, I wouldn't be okay with it either.
That's what? It's worth the same amount. It's actually worth more than when I run their credit card, because there's no service fee on a check. So take that $2 and 12 cents per scan. So
we're a true business owner.
Yeah. So Courtney's dad collects checks twice a month and takes them and drops them off. And I run, you know, the credit cards. I can send them my PayPal link. They can pay via PayPal link. I can run their credit cards through PayPal. So we, based on the numbers that I put together for Courtney, I say, Courtney, if we buy this at this price, we're going to get 20% cash on cash. And at that time, you know, this was July of last year. And so we felt good at 20% cash on cash, comparable to what
amazing.
Our cabin.
Comparable to what our cabin.
Where can you find that right now?
Nowhere.
In asset class, yeah.
Nowhere. I mean, you got to go do drug deals. Seriously, to get that kind of cash on cash is crazy. Yeah.
And so I have no property management on that. I am the property manager of this facility as well, because, you know, that would take a chunk of money out of it. So thankfully, this small facility has one of the purposes of buying it was to teach me how to do this in order to buy a larger facility. Okay. And so, fast forward a little. So this one was purchased on cash, coming up on 1 year anniversary. The expenses have been less than $2,000 I spent on this since we purchased it. And that's $1,000 was the insurance. So we spent less than $1,000 on maintenance and everything else, including taxes in the last, 9 months, I guess. And so that shifted to now I'm contacting owners in a larger circle there in Southeast Tennessee, down into North Georgia. But North Georgia's tax wise is a little bit less pretty to me. And so I did go to Alabama because I like Alabama similar to Tennessee in tax wise.
Yeah, very good taxes.
And Middle Florida. Mm-hmm. Middle Florida is where I wanted to get into, not on the ocean, because land, as you mentioned, you have to buy the land. Land costs too much. And so we found this facility in Middle Florida, and it was not for sale. It was kind of a family run business, and they focus on multifamilies, but they purchased this self storage facility because they wanted to do something different. Maybe they wanted to diversify. Mm-hmm. They purchased 3 years ago. So I started the conversation with the guy. And it was funny because it wasn't on market. We talked for probably 4 months back and forth before we got to like, all right, let me just make you an offer on this place. Like, tell me, because he's like, oh, I'm getting
it's
married.
Like longer than dating.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because he's
that's totally what the people say about it. Yes. And like, that's the mindset to go in is like, this is someone's baby. You're going to ask to date their daughter. Like, come with your hat in your hand and, you know, do the
whole
thing.
Yeah, you walk the grounds with them, and you shake hands and leave, and you never talk about anything else. You're like, wait, what just happened? What am I doing?
I
can't do that from outside the U.S., right? So I'm sending people. I'm like, my brother went to see the one in Florida for me. He's got, like, I'm on his WhatsApp call, like, seeing the facility through the
phone. That is awesome. I love it. You know, because people in the States are like, oh, I can't do this. You know, oh, I can't just go up and, like, ask somebody about their property. And like, here you guys are, you're overseas and you're just like, I think I'm just going to go buy a self-storage property in Florida. Yeah. And then like, you know, you're targeting places that are not on the internet, right? You're sending people and you're said, there is a way and a workaround to do all of this from overseas. Mm-hmm. And I think using the fact that like you're far away from the United States can't really be an excuse sometimes, you know, because there's always a way to do it. And I think you guys are an amazing example of exactly that. Like where there's a will, there's a way, right?
And the, I'd say too, the macro trends in each of these asset classes are important. Technology has allowed, you know, for you to have people check in and check out of your short-term rental without anyone needing to be there to let them in or them to go to an office and get a key. Self-storage is in the same direction. The wave of the future for self-storage facilities is to have unmanned facilities, mm-hmm. as they call them. There's mm-hmm. all kinds of technology out now where they have like Bluetooth enabled locks where you rent the unit from your phone. Then you go and you use your phone with Bluetooth technology to unlock the unit. And, you know, there's just, you never have to interact with a person. And that's another reason why we gravitated to these asset classes is because, okay, maybe where we're at right now in our investment journey, it's not totally, you know, contactless and, you know, Matt's still maybe a little more hands-on or we're kind of making it work by asking for a favor from a family member or whatever. But where these asset classes are headed is truly to be automated mm-hmm. and not to require, you know, people to be there to make the business run. That, you know, the cleaner, you still have the cleaners, of course, in short-term rentals, but, and you still have to have someone maybe come clean out a unit or whatever in self-storage, but like that's all hireable. Mm-hmm. And I think we all probably have learned this lesson from COVID is that we can do a lot more from distance than maybe we ever thought possible. So I think it's important too, when you're trying to choose what asset class you're going for, like where do you think it's headed? Like take some time to think about that or learn about that.
Yeah, because and to ride on Courtney's point, the facility that we're buying in Florida currently has a manager who mm-hmm. Sits behind the desk and she actually lives on site. And our transition is to, automated and no manager is going to be present. And so we're having to spend some money to upgrade a certain few things that generally the manager, he or she took care of. But we're going to spend some money up front now to get that done because it's going to save me money to do
on
that.
On salary, yeah.
Correct, versus mm-hmm. pay someone. And all the strings that come with having salary, having employees. We don't have employees. We have mm-hmm. a couple of 1099 contractors, and that's who we deal with, right? And that just changes things quite a bit for us. So, so we're going to automate, move forward, and kind of push that, slide that line towards more automated, which is can be painful. Like not everyone wants to go there, and we right. have and. Yeah. Then, the facility
people still want to pay by check, so
yeah,
right.
yeah.
Exactly. Crazy.
Well, I would also say too, like you know, we've a couple of times in our story, we said, "Oh, we asked a family member to do this. Oh, we asked someone to do that." And I know people may be listening and think, "Well, I don't have anybody who mm-hmm. would do anything like that for me, my family, you know, whatever the situation is." TaskRabbit, resources like that, just what you were saying. If there's a will, there is a way. Now you can still find people and pay them not that much money to go and do pretty simple tasks for you and get their smartphone out and video and live mm-hmm. video, you know, chat with you and say, "Hey, this is what I'm seeing." And you say, "Okay, I want you to open this and check that." Like that's totally a thing now.
Yeah.
And you can use
FaceTime.
Those resources.
FaceTime.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So this sounds like the Florida place is a bigger self-storage facility. So you went from 24 units to what are you looking at in terms of unit size now?
Okay, so the Florida facility is 160 units. And then actually that's kind of like single A ball probably for baseball analogy. There's some huge facilities out there. Maybe double A.
Okay, not like thousands of units,
right,
but
yeah,
hey.
Yeah. No,
from 24 to 160, you know, sure. I mean, you got to give yourself some credit.
But there is no doubt that I'm losing more sleep on this one, and we don't even own it yet, than I do on the 24. So yes, this is true.
And why is that? Is just the negotiation is more difficult? Is the financing more difficult? Like what changes when you go from like smaller, because obviously cash purchase is a lot simpler. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what happens when you get bigger?
Yeah, it's a terribly painful process of having to try to explain an SBA loan. And we are getting SBA loan on that property. And that is proven to be very challenging and very time consuming and mm-hmm. just takes a ton of my effort to get to that point. And we chose an SBA loan for a handful of reasons. And I'm sure once we're done and we are closed and we're ready to move forward, then I'm going to be okay with having done this. But that process does take a lot longer doing the SBA loan. It's just more complicated to do it that way, obviously, than making a cash purchase. So,
and SBA, Small Business Administration. So these are government loans for entrepreneurial folk like yourselves. Mm-hmm. I'm imagining you're doing the SBA program where you are purchasing real estate and the business at the same time, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. And so you've got to work with very specific lenders who are familiar mm-hmm. with the SBA requirements. What kind of time frame is on a loan like that? Because most people are, they're used to kind of like mortgages. Okay, so the loan takes 30 days. Mm-hmm. SBA is very different. What kind of stuff do they ask you for? And like, how long is that time frame between sort of when you've got a deal and mm-hmm. when it actually gets funded?
Yeah, I think if you can do an SBA loan in 90 days, you're doing a whole lot of things right. 90 days to me, I heard this before we started this process and now I'm living through this process. And yes, 90 days would be pretty quick on this because they're collecting a whole lot of information, financial, individual financial, business financial from the buyer and the seller.
Right.
And so they're looking at a myriad of things to make sure that they feel that this loan is going to be a good loan. And so there are some great niche banks out there that are very focused on doing this. We chose one that is a niche bank for self-storage.
Mm-hmm.
There's some that for laundromats. I'm
for
sure
laundromats,
there's a bank
yep.
out there.
Yeah, that, there's that, one in New York that I'm working with.
Mm-hmm. You know what? This is what we focus on. And that works for them, right? So the one we chose is a bank in North Carolina that's taking great care of me to this point. They've really held my hand through this process. And I know, looking at the numbers, I keep telling myself and keep telling Courtney, like, as soon as we get this thing closed, the cash flow we believe is going to be strong on it. And also, we're buying it. We got the appraisal back and we're buying for less than the appraisal. Like, what more? Like, that's what, like, that brings peace, right?
Because yeah, that's proof. That's proof that you're doing it right.
Mm-hmm. That by itself means that even if I hold it for the 3 years minimum required for SBA for not having an early payoff, I can sell it for more than that in 3 years if this turns out to be a train wreck.
Fantastic. Yeah.
If I can, cash flow for 3 years, which doing the numbers, it will. And let's say it doesn't go well, then I can sell it in 3 years, and be done and take that money and 1031 into something else. Okay, no problem.
Nice.
I don't think that's going to happen. I believe in this facility. I know this part of Florida. I did the math on, so there it's very much focused on square foot per capita. So you're looking at how much square footage of storage is available compared to how many people are available.
Mm.
And so the national average, if you're buying that you want to stay under, is 8. So if you're under, if you look in the facility and there's, like I said, unfortunately, they can take a long time to explain all the different groups out here. They can tell you all this, how to find a square foot per capita and all that stuff. But nationally, if you're looking at a facility and it's 5 square foot per capita, you should look at it and consider buying it. But that doesn't mean the facility's full. It might be an empty facility and still have a 5 per square foot per capita, right? The first one that we purchased was in the mid-4s for, and then it's based on miles as well. So it's the 1 mile radius, a 3 mile radius, a 5 mile radius, and then a 10 mile radius. And so where we're talking about in Tennessee, we care about the 3 and the 5 mile radius because that's how far people are driving to put their stuff in storage.
That's a function of how densely populated the market
Correct.
Is.
Tampa, Florida would be Tampa, Florida, you're looking at the 1 and the 3s, right? That's all you care about in Tampa, Florida because public storage is there. All the big names
are
in those.
Big names
the
are there.
Correct. Mm-hmm. All the REITs are in those markets. We're not right now buying in markets where REITs are located, and that's on purpose.
The competition is, corporate money, they've got a whole bunch of stuff to invest in facilities. Yeah. And so you're really targeting.
They can afford to buy at a 3 cap. They can afford to buy at a 3 cap and that's no problem for them. Like we don't want to try to compete with that.
So are you then looking at smaller towns then? You're out of like major metropolitan areas then, really?
Yeah, we're in tertiary markets for our self-storage. That's kind of the phrase that's used in self-storage. Tertiary market is kind of where we're at.
Smaller towns, basically.
Smaller towns, population, obviously when you get out in the country, it's not a city limits really that you're measuring anyway. So the population on the Florida property is greater than the population in Tennessee property in the 5 and 10 mile radius. But immediately across the street from our Florida facility is a subdivision, and 1.5 miles away is a retirement community that has, mobile homes that are inside of it, which means that they need storage space. And guess what? I have a storage facility 1.2 miles away.
Perfect.
And so I'll be glad to hold your stuff. And this, there's tons of lakes in this area. Like our add-on that we're going to do with this one, once we get the gate fixed.
Like store your boat or your
correct.
Fishing equipment.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. We're going to have covered parking because in Florida, the sun just bakes things,
Eats
right?
Things,
so if I can put some covered parking on it, we can charge significantly more, and that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, I did want to say too, because you didn't mention it, the bank, go ahead and say their name, Live Oak Bank.
Live Oak, yeah, I didn't know.
Live Oak
Bank in Wilmington, North Carolina, good folks.
They specialize in self-storage and veterinarian
practices. So
very two, specific, right?
They're some of the lowest defaulting businesses.
Veterinarians don't default on loans. And so Live Oak's we're going to take those loans, and they've done well. So Live Oak has been fantastic for me. They've been great. And once again, doing all this from abroad, right? So like my communication with them has been obviously back and forth, phone calls here and there. Once in a while, something goes wrong and I can't do it. But we're going through this process outside of that area. I've been to that town where they're in, mm-hmm. but
They do nationwide.
They're doing nationwide, right? So, so that's what we're looking towards doing on the Florida property, and we're excited about it. I told Courtney and I had a conversation today. Actually, I'm just excited that we can get it closed. So now that will be
that's a big achievement.
Then unfortunately, then's the second set of headaches that will come once we get it closed, right? Because transitioning 160 tenants over is very different than transitioning 24 tenants. So rewind 7 minutes to my conversation about buying the small facility. Now we're scaling up. And so now we're actually going to have a landing page. We're going to have a website. From this website, you'll be able to rent from all three of our facilities, right?
Ooh,
and so
fancy.
It'll be, we'll have property management software. So Matt's not going to be doing all these things anymore, especially on the large facility. We're going to crunch the numbers to make sure that it makes sense to put both of the small facilities on the property management software. If it does, we're going to do it, no problem. But
we anticipate that it will, because it's from the software mm-hmm. side, it's as if it was just one big property,
right. So that's kind of, that's our scale up in that regard is I'm going to be doing less of the credit card running type things. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to have to contact people less, when they're late or when they're due or whatever. That's what we're going to be paying $100 a month for these things to take care of. So, picked our logo out. So we have a logo, which doesn't matter, but I put a lot of effort into it. So I hope it's a great one, right? Kind of thing like that. So, we're looking forward to scaling up with that. To be honest, we're not done on self-storage. I found a facility that is, the Google Earth. You can drive by. There's no phone number. However, if you do Google Earth and click on the street, you can zoom in and get the phone number, right? So I sent them a text. Do you want to sell your place?
So he's like a Google Earth ninja now, because he's like drives around looking for storage on
That's
Google
hilarious.
Earth.
Yeah. Oh, goodness.
And that's one of that's going back to Stacey Rossetti. That's one of her selling points, because she focuses on that, because she buys in tertiary markets as well. She's in North Georgia. That's where the majority of her facilities are. Mm-hmm. But you can sit at your house and get on a highway and drive a highway from overhead. If you zoom in, three clicks, you have to tell the difference between in Tennessee and Georgia between a chicken house and a self-storage facility. But once you can decipher those two things, like you can narrow it down, and then, that's their phone number. Great. Let me call them. Right. So.
That is awesome. Oh my goodness. Wow. Wow. I am so impressed with what you've been able to achieve since 2019. I mean, it's been not even 3 years. I mean, you've really been working on this thing. And I mean, it sounds like you've got all kinds of stuff in the works and more to come.
That's the plan. Yeah, that's the plan. We definitely want to add probably one more cabin, I think. And the next best self-storage and the next best cabin are kind of what we're looking for right now. Uh-huh. Right. We feel like we know our criteria. Like I say, Courtney does fantastic work on the numbers for short-term rentals. I feel confident in my work on self-storage, running the numbers. I'm comfortable having the conversations kind of with, Courtney said, the mom and pops. Like I can talk to those people and draw out months long and catering and having conversations with them, so that I'm their first call when they want to sell. Like, that's what I want, because there's two facilities in Tennessee
been courting.
Correct. Right. Every quarter,
you're a good
I
dater,
send them a text.
You're a good dater.
I think one of the things that we realized we needed to do in our processes was get a CRM.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
For this very reason, for all mm-hmm. the follow up, to kind of systematize a process that hopefully to the owner feels very organic and, but there's a method to the madness. And if you're going to really try and scale up, you've got to start to implement those kind of tools that, the pros use, as you know.
And honestly, I mean, I think you guys have really embraced the entrepreneurial journey, because a lot of people start this, and I mean, like I did, and I was like, cool, I'll have a house and I'll do some stuff on my Excel spreadsheet. And it's all, I mean, it's not very professional. It was not professionally done. And then you get better. But I mean, you guys just, you were like, this is a business. It sounds like you decided from day one, this is a business. This is not just a hobby. This is not something that we're just going to, you know, kind of sort of half do. Like, what are the tools that we need? Who are the people that we need to know? And you just went in and did it and then took action, right? Like you decided, okay, we've got all the tools and we're just going to start going and doing these things. Because I think people do get hung up on that step too. They can overeducate themselves. They can do a lot of stuff. And then it's scary. They're like, whoa, but I don't want to talk to some random, you know, phone number that I got off of Google Earth, or, you know, because it might be a chicken house, but you know, who cares, right? So you can call 10 chicken houses and maybe you get one that's not, and then maybe that person hangs up on you, but you know what? You try 5 more and maybe you get somebody that'll talk to you. Mm-hmm. But that takes persistence. It takes time. It takes, you know, not giving up and really having the belief that like, this is worth it. And it's something that you're building for yourselves, for your family. I mean, I cannot wait to see where you guys are at in like 5-10 years, because we're going to be like, oh yeah, we knew them when they were in the Foreign Service, but they're self-storage kings and queens now. Plus they've got this whole host of, you know, I mean, no, honestly, like, because you guys have really, I mean, from the beginning treated it like a business, and you're doing really well. So congratulations, really.
Thanks so much.
Treating amazing it like a business work is Courtney's credit. Like she has helped emphasize that with me, because that's not my strong suit. So the other thing I'll say is you don't have to be the most organized person out there to do this, because I am not that. And I have learned some me of these skills. I still have Excel spreadsheets. Don't tell Courtney, but I still have a few. But you can do that. And it is a bit scary, no doubt about that. But and things will go wrong. There's no doubt about that as well. We have found that picking a couple asset classes that we're comfortable with, and it's amazing how quickly, if you just turn the TV off and spend that time, you can learn an hour a night. Even as parents, like we have an 8- and 3-year-old, like we don't have much.
You
free have
tons
time.
Of time. You like, do not.
The fact that our doorbell hasn't rung during this call is amazing. I have a 3-year-old at someone's house, and it's his birthday. And he's watching my kid for me, so good for him. But. So, you know, you can learn these things in a period of time and get to the point to where, even if for me, like I tend to be a little bit more cautious than Courtney, which is why I bought a 24. I said I convinced
unit
her to buy
first,
a 24
get your feet
unit
wet.
First, right?
Yep.
The cabin one, we jumped in the deep end because I fully believed in that one. Courtney had done fantastic work and knew the backs in and outs of money. The self-storage one seemed a bit like, wait, people just give you money to just hold stuff? Like, doesn't make sense. They're like, there's literally nothing there. Like today is the middle of the month, and so I have 4 tenants that due today. So I took 12 minutes and ran 4 credit cards, you know, and during that brought in, you know, $285, right? So that's their pay for the month now, right? So great. And then I'm done with that. I don't touch it again until the first of next month when I collect people from the first. And then in the future, that'll be set up automatically. But you can get in on small side. You can do it from abroad. I loved my work as an EFM. As Courtney said, I had awesome jobs. Every tour until this tour, I've worked in the embassy and the consulate, and I enjoyed my work very much. And I was a bit dragging my feet to give it up, because I liked going into work and I liked the connections and friends that I made. The Foreign Service have fantastic people in it. Mm-hmm. I made some great friends along the way, and thankfully, I'm still able to make more. But, you know, I think a lot of my friends now are, you know, doing what you're doing, Tanya, which is, you know, doing real estate while they're Foreign Service officers, right?
Yep.
Or their family's Foreign Service officers.
Side hustle.
So, yeah. And so that opens up a lot of cool conversations. You know, so what you're doing is great because you're able to connect these people, and we appreciate that. So
amazing. Well, listeners, there you have it. Short-term rentals, self-storage can all be done from overseas. Lots of delegating, but not impossible. And Courtney and Matt, thank you so much for joining us today. And I would say I wish you all the luck, but it sounds like you're going to have success no matter what you do. So can't wait to see you in like 5 or 10 years, what you're doing, and we'll check back. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks so much, Tanya.
If you like this episode and want more, make sure to give us 5 stars on the podcast player of your choice. And after that, check out our Facebook page. From there, you can learn about our other episodes, connect with our guests, and of course, share your own ideas for success. We'll see you next time.